all the while raising her kimono to keep the hem dry, until the men finally see what they've been waiting for and begin to cheer and toast one another with sake. "With all the American soldiers in Guillaume these days," she went on, "English will get you further than dance. Anyway, the Cabarenjo Theater has been turned into a kyaberei." I'd never heard this word before, which came from the English cabaret, but I learned soon enough what it meant. Even while living with the Arashino family, I'd heard stories about American soldiers and their noisy parties. Still, I was shocked when I stepped into the entryway of a tea house later that afternoon and found, instead of the usual row of men's shoes at the base of the step, a confusion of army boots, each of which looked as big to me as Mother's little dog Taku had been. Inside the front entrance hall, the first thing I saw was an American man in his underwear squeezing himself beneath the shelf of an alcove while two geisha, both laughing, tried to pull him out. When I looked at the dark hair on his arms and chest, and even on his back, I had the feeling I'd never seen anything quite so beastly. He'd apparently lost his clothing in a drinking game and was trying to hide, but soon he let the women draw him out by the arms and lead him back down the hall and through a door. I heard whistling and cheering when he entered. About a week after my return, I was finally ready to make my first appearance as a geisha again. I spent a day rushing from the hairdressers to the fortune tellers, soaking my hands to remove the last of the stains, and searching all over Guillaume to find the makeup I needed. Now that I was nearing 30, I would no longer be expected to wear white makeup, except on special occasions. But I did spend a half hour at my makeup stand that day, trying to use different shades of Western-style face powder to hide how thin I'd grown. When Mr. Baku came to dress me, young Etsuko stood and watched, just as I had once watched Hatsumomo, and it was the astonishment in her eyes more than anything I saw while looking in the mirror that convinced me I truly looked like a geisha once again. When at last I set out that evening, all of Gion was blanketed in a beautiful snow, so powdery the slightest wind blew the roofs clean. I wore a kimono shawl and carried a lacquered umbrella, so I'm sure I was as unrecognizable as the day I'd visited Gion looking like a peasant. I recognized only about half the geisha I passed. It was easy to tell those who'd lived in Gion before the war, because they gave a little bow of courtesy as they passed, even when they didn't seem to recognize me. The others didn't bother with more than a nod. Seeing soldiers here and there on the streets, I dreaded what I might find when I reached the Ichiriki, but in fact the entryway was lined with the shiny black shoes worn by officers, and strangely enough, the tea house seemed quieter than in my days as an apprentice. Nobu hadn't yet arrived, or at least I didn't see any sign of him, but I was shown directly into one of the large rooms on the ground floor and told he would join me there shortly. Ordinarily, I would have waited in the maid's quarters up the hallway, where I could warm my hands and sip a cup of tea. No geisha likes a man to find her idle. But I didn't mind waiting for Nobu, and besides, I considered it a privilege to spend a few minutes by myself in such a room. I'd been starved for beauty over the past 5 years, and this was a room that would have astonished you with its loveliness. The walls were covered with a pale yellow silk, whose texture gave a kind of presence and made me feel held by them just as an egg is held by its shell. I'd expected Nobu to arrive by himself, but when I finally heard him in the hallway, it was clear he'd brought Deputy Minister Sato with him. I didn't mind if Nobu found me waiting, as I've mentioned, but I thought it would be disastrous to give the minister reason to think I might be unpopular. So I slipped quickly through the adjoining doors into an unused room. As it turned out, this gave me a chance to listen to Nobu struggle to be pleasant. "Isn't this quite a room, Minister?" he said. I heard a little grunt in reply. "I requested it especially for you. That painting in the Zen style is really something, don't you think?" Then, after a long silence, Nobu added, "Yes, it's a beautiful night. Oh, did I already ask you if you've tasted the Ichiriki Tea House's own special brand of sake?" Things continued in this way, with Nobu probably feeling about as comfortable as an elephant trying to act like a butterfly. When at length I went into the hallway and slid open the door, Nobu seemed very relieved to see me. I got my first good look at the minister only after introducing myself and going to kneel at the table. He didn't look at all familiar, though he'd claimed to have spent hours staring at me. I don't know how I managed to forget him, because he had a very distinctive appearance. I'd never seen anyone who had more trouble just lugging his face around. He kept his chin tucked under his breastbone as though he couldn't quite hold up his head, and he had a peculiar lower jaw that protruded so that his breath seemed to blow right up his nose. After he gave me a little nod and said his name, it was a long while before I heard any sound from him other than grunts, for a grunt seemed to be his way of responding to almost anything. I did my best to make conversation until the maid rescued us by arriving with a tray of sake. I filled the minister's cup and was astonished to watch him pour the sake directly into his lower jaw in the same way he might have poured it into a drain. He shut his mouth for a moment and then opened it again, and the sake was gone, without any of the usual signs people make when they swallow. I wasn't really sure he'd swallowed at all until he held out his empty cup. Things went on like this for 15 minutes or more while I tried to put the minister at his ease by telling him stories and jokes and asking him a few questions, but soon I began to think perhaps there was no such thing as the minister at his ease. He never gave me an answer of more than a single word. I suggested we play a drinking game. I even asked if he liked to sing. The longest exchange we had in our first half hour was when the minister asked if I was a dancer. "Why, yes, I am. Would the minister like me to perform a short piece?" "No," he said, and that was the end of it. The minister may not have liked making eye contact with people, but he certainly liked to study his food, as I discovered after a maid arrived with dinner for the two men. Before putting anything in his mouth, he held it up with his chopsticks and peered at it, turning it this way and that, and if he didn't recognize it, he asked me what it was. "It's a piece of yam boiled in soy sauce and sugar," I told him, when he held up something orange. Actually, I didn't have the least idea whether it was yam or a slice of whale liver or anything else, but I didn't think the minister wanted to hear that. Later, when he held up a piece of marinated beef and asked me about it, I decided to tease him a bit. "Oh, that's a strip of marinated leather," I said. "It's a specialty of the house here. It's made from the skin of elephants. So I guess I should have said elephant leather."
"Elephant leather?"
"Now, minister, you know I'm teasing you. It's a piece of beef. Why do you look at your food so closely? Did you think you would come here and eat dog or something?"
"I've eaten dog, you know," he said to me.
"That's very interesting, but we don't have any dog here tonight, so don't look at your chopsticks anymore." Very soon we began playing a drinking game. Nobu hated drinking games, but he kept quiet after I made a face at him. We may have let the minister lose a bit more often than we should have, because later, as we were trying to explain the rules to a drinking game he'd never played, his eyes became as unsteady as corks floating in the surf. All at once, he stood up and headed off toward one corner of the room.
"Now, minister," Nobu said to him, "exactly where are you planning on going?"
The minister's answer was to let out a burp, which I considered a very well-spoken reply, because it was apparent he was about to throw up. Nobu and I rushed over to help him, but he'd already clamped his hand over his mouth. If he'd been a volcano, he would have been smoking by this time, so we had no choice but to roll open the glass doors to the garden to let him vomit onto the snow there. You may be appalled at the thought of a man throwing up into one of these exquisite decorative gardens, but the minister certainly wasn't the first. We geisha tried to help a man down the hallway to the toilet, but sometimes we can't manage it. If we say to one of the maids that a man has just visited the garden, they all know exactly what we mean and come at once with their cleaning supplies. Nobu and I did our best to keep the minister kneeling in the doorway with his head suspended over the snow, but despite our efforts, he soon tumbled out head first. I did my best to shove him to one side so he would at least end up in snow that hadn't been vomited upon. But the minister was as bulky as a thick piece of meat. All I really did was turn him onto his side as he fell. Nobu and I could do nothing but look at each other in dismay at the sight of the minister lying perfectly still in the deep snow, like a branch that had fallen from a tree.
"Why, Nobu-san," I said, "I didn't know how much fun your guest was going to be."
"I believe we've killed him, and if you ask me, he deserved it. What an irritating man!"
"Is this how you act toward your honored guests? You must take him out onto the street and walk him around a bit to wake him up. The cold will do him good."
"He's lying in the snow. Isn't that cold enough?"
"Nobu-san," I said, and I suppose this was enough of a reprimand, for Nobu let out a sigh and stepped down into the garden in his stocking feet to begin the task of bringing the minister back to consciousness. While he was busy with this, I went to find a maid who could help, because I couldn't see how Nobu would get the minister back up into the tea house with only one arm. Afterward, I fetched some dry socks for the two men and alerted a maid to tidy the garden after we'd left. When I returned to the room, Nobu and the minister were at the table again. You can imagine how the minister looked and smelled. I had to peel his wet socks off his feet with my own hands, but I kept my distance from him while doing it. As soon as I was done, he slumped back onto the mats and was unconscious again a moment later.
"Do you think he can hear us?" I whispered to Nobu.
"I don't think he hears us even when he's conscious," Nobu said. "Did you ever meet a bigger fool in your life?"
"Nobu-san, quietly," I whispered. "Do you think he actually enjoyed himself tonight? I mean, is this the sort of evening you had in mind?"
"It isn't a matter of what I had in mind, it's what he had in mind."
"I hope that doesn't mean we'll be doing the same thing again next week."
"If the minister is pleased with the evening, I'm pleased with the evening."
"Nobu-san, really? You certainly weren't pleased. You look as miserable as I've ever seen you. Considering the minister's condition, I think we can assume he isn't having the best night of his life either."
"You can't assume anything when it comes to the minister."
"I'm sure he'll have a better time if we can make the atmosphere more festive somehow. Wouldn't you agree?"
"Bring a few more geisha next time if you think it will help," Nobu said. "We'll come back next weekend. Invite that older sister of yours."
"Mameha's certainly clever, but the minister is so exhausting to entertain. We need a geisha who's going to, I don't know, make a lot of noise, distract everyone. You know, now that I think of it, it seems to me we need another guest as well, not just another geisha."
"I can't see any reason for that."
"If the minister is busy drinking and sneaking looks at me, and you're busy growing increasingly fed up with him, we're not going to have a very festive evening," I said. "To tell the truth, Nobu-san, perhaps you should bring the chairman with you next time." You may wonder if I'd been plotting all along to bring the evening to this moment. It's certainly true that in coming back to Gion, I'd hoped more than anything else to find a way of spending time with the chairman. It wasn't so much that I craved the chance to sit in the same room with him again, to lean in and whisper some comment and take in the scent of his skin. If those sorts of moments would be the only pleasure life offered me, I'd be better off shutting out that one brilliant source of light to let my eyes begin to adjust to the darkness. Perhaps it was true, as it now seemed, that my life was falling toward Nobu. I wasn't so foolish as to imagine I could change the course of my destiny, but neither could I give up the last traces of hope.
"I've considered bringing the chairman," Nobu replied. "The minister is very impressed with him, but I don't know, Sayuri. I told you once already, he's a busy man."
The minister jerked on the mats as if someone had poked him, and then managed to pull himself up until he was sitting at the table. Nobu was so disgusted at the sight of his clothing that he sent me out to bring back a maid with a damp towel. After the maid had cleaned the minister's jacket and left us alone again, Nobu said,
"Well, minister, this certainly has been a wonderful evening. Next time, we'll have even more fun, because instead of throwing up on just me, you might be able to throw up on the chairman, and perhaps another geisha or two as well."
I was very pleased to hear Nobu mention the chairman, but I didn't dare react.
"I like this geisha," said the minister. "I don't want another one." "Her name is Sayuri, and you'd better call her that, or she won't agree to come. Now stand up, minister. It's time for us to get you home."
I walked them as far as the entryway, where I helped them into their coats and shoes, and watched the two of them set out in the snow. The minister was having such a hard time, he would have trudged right into the gate if Nobu hadn't taken him by the elbow to steer him. Later that same night, I dropped in with Mameha on a party full of American officers. By the time we arrived, their translator was of no use to anyone because they'd made him drink so much, but the officers all recognized Mameha. I was a bit surprised when they began humming and waving their arms, signaling to her that they wanted her to put on a dance. I expected we would sit quietly and watch her, but the moment she began, several of the officers went up and started prancing around alongside. If you'd told me it would happen, I might have felt a little uncertain beforehand, but to see it, well, I burst out laughing and enjoyed myself more than I had in a long while. We ended up playing a game in which Mameha and I took turns on the shamisen while the American officers danced around the table. Whenever we stopped the music, they had to rush back to their places. The last to sit drank a penalty glass of sake. In the middle of the party, I commented to Mameha how peculiar it was to see everyone having so much fun without speaking the same language, considering that I'd been at a party with Nobu and another Japanese man earlier that evening, and we'd had an awful time. She asked me a bit about the party. "Three people can certainly be too few," she said after I'd told her about it, "particularly if one of them is Nobu in a foul mood. I suggested he bring the chairman next time, and we need another geisha as well, don't you think? Someone loud and funny?" "Yes," said Mameha. "Perhaps I'll stop by." I was puzzled at first to hear her say this, because really no one on earth would have described Mameha as loud and funny. I was about to tell her again what I meant when, all at once, she seemed to recognize our misunderstanding and said, "Yes, I'm interested to stop by, but I suppose if you want someone loud and funny, you ought to speak to your old friend Pumpkin." Since returning to Gion, I'd encountered memories of Pumpkin everywhere. In fact, the very moment I'd stepped into the Okia for the first time, I remembered her there in the formal entrance hall on the day Gion had closed, when she'd given me a stiff farewell bow of the sort she was obliged to offer the adopted daughter. I'd gone on thinking of her again and again all during that week as we cleaned. At one point, while helping the maid wipe the dust from the woodwork, I pictured Pumpkin on the walkway right before me, practicing her shamisen. The empty space there seemed to hold a terrible sadness within it. Had it really been so many years since we were girls together? I suppose I might easily have put it all out of my mind, but I'd never quite learned to accept the disappointment of our friendship running dry. I blamed the terrible rivalry that Hatsumomo had forced upon us. My adoption was the final blow, of course. But still, I couldn't help holding myself partly accountable. Pumpkin had shown me only kindness. I might have found some way to thank her for that. Strangely, I hadn't thought of approaching Pumpkin until Mameha suggested it. I had no doubt our first encounter would be awkward, but I mulled it over the rest of that night and decided that maybe Pumpkin would appreciate being introduced into a more elegant circle, as a change from the soldiers' parties. Of course, I had another motive as well. Now that so many years had passed, perhaps we might begin to mend our friendship. I knew almost nothing about Pumpkin's circumstances except that she was back in Gion. So I went to speak with Auntie, who had received a letter from her several years earlier. It turned out that in the letter, Pumpkin had pleaded to be taken back into the Okia when it reopened, saying she would never find a place for herself otherwise. Auntie might have been willing to do it, but Mother had refused on the grounds that Pumpkin was a poor investment. "She's living in a sad little Okia over in the Hanami-cho section," Auntie told me. "But don't take pity on her and bring her back here for a visit. Mother won't want to see her. I think it's foolish for you to speak with her anyway." "I have to admit," I said, "I've never felt right about what happened between Pumpkin and me."
"Nothing happened between you. Pumpkin fell short and you succeeded. Anyway, she's doing very well these days. I hear the Americans can't get enough of her. She's crude, you know, in just the right sort of way for them."
That very afternoon, I crossed Shizhou Avenue to the Hanami-cho section of Gion and found that sad little Okia Auntie had told me about. If you remember Hatsumomo's friend Corinne and how her Okia had burned during the darkest years of the war, well, that fire had damaged the Okia next door as well, and this was where Pumpkin was now living.
Its exterior walls were charred all along one side, and a part of the tiled roof that had burned away was crudely patched with wooden boards. I suppose in sections of Tokyo or Osaka, it might have been the most intact building in the neighborhood, but it stood out in the middle of Kyoto. A young maid showed me into a reception room that smelled of wet ash and came back later to serve me a cup of weak tea. I waited a long while before Pumpkin at last came and slid open the door. I could scarcely see her in the dark hallway outside, but just knowing she was there made me feel such warmth, I rose from the table to go and embrace her. She took a few steps into the room and then knelt and gave a bow as formal as if I'd been mother. I was startled by this and stopped where I stood.
"Really, Pumpkin, it's only me," I said.
She wouldn't even look at me, but kept her eyes to the mats like a maid awaiting orders. I felt very disappointed and went back to my place at the table. When we'd last seen each other in the final years of the war, Pumpkin's face had still been round and full just as in childhood, but with a more sorrowful look. She had changed a great deal in the years since. I didn't know it at the time, but after the closing of the lens factory where she'd worked, Pumpkin spent more than 2 years in Osaka as a prostitute. Her mouth seemed to have shrunken in size, perhaps because she held it taut, I don't know, and though she had the same broad face, her heavy cheeks had thinned, leaving her with a gaunt elegance that was astonishing to me. I don't mean to suggest Pumpkin had become a beauty to rival Hatsumomo or anything of the sort, but her face had a certain womanliness that had never been there before. "I'm sure the years have been difficult, Pumpkin," I said to her, "but you look quite lovely." Pumpkin didn't reply to this. She just inclined her head faintly to indicate she'd heard me. I congratulated her on her popularity and tried asking about her life since the war, but she remained so expressionless that I began to feel sorry I'd come. Finally, after an awkward silence, she spoke.
"Have you come here just to chat, Sayuri? Because I don't have anything to say that will interest you."
"The truth is," I said, "I saw Nobu Tashikazu recently, and actually, Pumpkin, he'll be bringing a certain man to Gion from time to time. I thought perhaps you'd be kind enough to help us entertain him."
"But of course, you've changed your mind now that you've seen me."
"Why, no," I said. "I don't know why you say that. Nobu Tashikazu and the chairman, Iwamura Ken, I mean, Chairman Iwamura would appreciate your company greatly. It's as simple as that."
For a moment, Pumpkin just knelt in silence, peering down at the mats.
"I've stopped believing that anything in life is as simple as that," she said at last.
"I know you think I'm stupid."
"Pumpkin!"
"But I think you probably have some other reason you're not going to tell me about."
Pumpkin gave a little bow, which I thought very enigmatic. Either it was an apology for what she had just said, or perhaps she was about to excuse herself.
"I suppose I do have another reason," I said. "To tell the truth, I'd hoped that after all these years, perhaps you and I might be friends, as we once were. We've survived so many things together, including Hatsumomo. It seems only natural to me that we should see each other again."
Pumpkin said nothing.
"Chairman Iwamura and Nobu will be entertaining the minister again next Saturday at the Ichiriki Tea House," I told her. "If you'll join us, I'd be very pleased to see you there." I'd brought her a packet of tea as a gift, and now I untied it from its silk cloth and placed it on the table. As I rose to my feet, I tried to think of something kind to tell her before leaving, but she looked so puzzled, I thought it best just to go.
Chapter 31. In the 5 or so years since I'd last seen the chairman, I'd read from time to time in the newspapers about the difficulties he'd suffered, not only his disagreements with the military government in the final years of the war, but his struggle since then to keep the occupation authorities from seizing his company. It wouldn't have surprised me if all these hardships had aged him a good deal. One photograph of him in the Yamimori newspaper showed a strained look around his eyes from worry, like the neighbor of Mr. Arashino's, who used to squint up at the sky so often watching for bombers. In any case, as the weekend neared, I had to remind myself that Nobu hadn't quite made up his mind that he would bring the chairman.
I could do nothing but hope.
On Saturday morning, I awakened early and slid back the paper screen over my window to find a cold rain falling against the glass. In the little alleyway below, a young maid was just climbing to her feet again after slipping on the icy cobblestones. It was a drab, miserable day, and I was afraid even to read my almanac. By noon, the temperature had dropped still further, and I could see my breath as I ate lunch in the reception room, with the sound of icy rain tapping against the window. Any number of parties that evening were canceled because the streets were too hazardous, and at nightfall, Auntie telephoned the Ichiriki to be sure Iwamura Electric's party was still on. The mistress told us the telephone lines to Osaka were down, and she couldn't be sure. So I bathed and dressed, and walked over to the Ichiriki on the arm of Mr. Beku, who wore a pair of rubber overshoes he'd borrowed from his younger brother, a dresser in the Pontocho district. The Ichiriki was in chaos when I arrived. A water pipe had burst in the servants' quarters, and the maids were so busy I couldn't get the attention of a single one. I showed myself down the hallway to the room where I'd entertained Nobu and the minister the week before. I didn't really expect anyone to be there, considering that both Nobu and the chairman would probably be traveling all the way from Osaka, and even Mameha had been out of town and might very well have had trouble returning. Before sliding open the door, I knelt a moment with my eyes closed and one hand on my stomach to calm my nerves. All at once, it occurred to me that the hallway was much too quiet. I couldn't hear even a murmur from within the room. With a terrible feeling of disappointment, I realized the room must be empty. I was about to stand and leave when I decided to slide open the door just in case. And when I did, there, at the table, holding a magazine with both hands, sat the chairman, looking at me over the top of his reading glasses. I was so startled to see him, I couldn't even speak. Finally, I managed to say, "My goodness, chairman, who has left you here all by yourself? The mistress will be very upset."
"She's the one who left me," he said, and slapped the magazine shut. "I've been wondering what happened to her."
"You don't even have a thing to drink. Let me bring you some sake."
"That's just what the mistress said. At this rate, you'll never come back, and I'll have to go on reading this magazine all night. I'd much rather have your company."
And here he removed his reading glasses, and while stowing them in his pocket, took a long look at me through narrowed eyes. The spacious room with its pale yellow walls of silk began to seem very small to me as I rose to join the chairman, for I don't think any room would have been enough to contain all that I was feeling. To see him again after so long awakened something desperate inside me. I was surprised to find myself feeling sad rather than joyful, as I would have imagined. At times, I'd worried that the chairman might have fallen headlong into old age during the war, just as Auntie had done. Even from across the room, I'd noticed that the corners of his eyes were creased more sharply than I remembered them. The skin around his mouth, too, had begun to sag, though it seemed to me to give his strong jaw a kind of dignity. I stole a glimpse of him as I knelt at the table and found that he was still watching me without expression. I was about to start a conversation, but the chairman spoke first.
"You are still a lovely woman, Sayori."
"Why, chairman," I said, "I'll never believe another word you say. I had to spend a half hour at my makeup stand this evening to hide the sunken look of my cheeks."
"I'm sure you've suffered worse hardships during the past several years than losing a bit of weight. I know I certainly have."
"Chairman, if you don't mind my saying it, I've heard a little bit from Nobu-san about the difficulties your company is facing."
"Yes, well, we needn't talk about that. Sometimes we get through adversity only by imagining what the world would be like if our dreams should ever come true."
He gave me a sad smile that I found so beautiful I lost myself, staring at the perfect crescent of his lips.
"Here's a chance for you to use your charm and change the subject," he said.
I hadn't even begun to reply before the door slid open, and Mameha entered, with Pumpkin right behind her. I was surprised to see Pumpkin. I hadn't expected she would come. As for Mameha, she'd evidently just returned from Nagoya and had rushed to the Ichiriki thinking she was terribly late. The first thing she asked, after greeting the chairman and thanking him for something he'd done for her the week before, was why Nobu and the minister weren't present.
The chairman admitted he'd been wondering the same thing.
"What a peculiar day this has been," Mameha said, talking almost to herself, it seemed. "The train sat just outside Kyoto Station for an hour, and we couldn't get off. Two young men finally jumped out through the window. I think one of them may have hurt himself. And then, when I finally reached the Ichiriki a moment ago, there didn't seem to be anyone here. Poor Pumpkin was wandering the hallways lost. You've met Pumpkin, haven't you, Chairman?"
I hadn't really looked closely at Pumpkin until now, but she was wearing an extraordinary ash-gray kimono, which was spotted below the waist with brilliant gold dots that turned out to be embroidered fireflies, set against an image of mountains and water in the light of the moon. Neither mine nor Mameha's could compare with it. The chairman seemed to find the robe as startling as I did, because he asked her to stand and model it for him. She stood very modestly and turned around once.
"I figured I couldn't set foot in a place like the Ichiriki in the sort of kimono I usually wear," she said. "Most of the ones at my Okia aren't very glamorous, though the Americans can't seem to tell the difference."
"If you hadn't been so frank with us, Pumpkin," Mameha said, "we might have thought this was your usual attire."
"Are you kidding me? I've never worn a robe this beautiful in my life. I borrowed it from an Okia down the street. You won't believe what they expect me to pay them, but I'll never have the money, so it doesn't make any difference now, does it?"
I could see that the chairman was amused, because a geisha never spoke in front of a man about anything as crass as the cost of a kimono. Mameha turned to say something to him, but Pumpkin interrupted.
"I thought some big shot was going to be here tonight."
"Maybe you were thinking of the chairman," Mameha said. "Don't you think he's a big shot?"
"He knows whether he's a big shot. He doesn't need me to tell him."
The chairman looked at Mameha and raised his eyebrows in mock surprise.
"Anyway, Sayori told me about some other guy," Pumpkin went on.
"Sato Noritaka, Pumpkin," the chairman said. "He's a new deputy minister of finance."
"Oh, I know that Sato guy. He looks just like a big pig."
We all laughed at this.
"Really, Pumpkin," Mameha said, "the things that come out of your mouth."
Just then the door slid open, and Nobu and the minister entered, both glowing red from the cold. Behind them was a maid carrying a tray with sake and snacks. Nobu stood hugging himself with his one arm and stamping his feet, but the minister just clumped right past him to the table. He grunted at Pumpkin and jerked his head to one side, telling her to move so he could squeeze in beside me. Introductions were made, and then Pumpkin said,
"Hey, Minister, I'll bet you don't remember me, but I know a lot about you."
The minister tossed into his mouth a cupful of sake I just poured for him and looked at Pumpkin with what I took to be a scowl.
"What do you know?" said Mameha. "Tell us something."
"I know the minister has a younger sister who's married to the mayor of Tokyo," Pumpkin said, "and I know he used to study karate and broke his hand once."
The minister looked a bit surprised, which told me that these things must be true.
"Also, Minister, I know a girl you used to know," Pumpkin went on.
"Nao Itsuko. We worked in the factory outside Osaka together. You know what she told me? She said the two of you did you know what together a couple of times."
I was afraid the minister would be angry, but instead his expression softened until I began to see what I felt certain was a glimmer of pride.
"She was a pretty girl, she was, that Itsuko," he said, looking at Nobu with a subdued smile.
"Why, minister," Nobu replied, "I'd never have guessed you had such a way with the ladies." His words sounded very sincere, but I could see the barely concealed look of disgust on his face. The chairman's eyes passed over mine. He seemed to find the whole encounter amusing. A moment later, the door slid open, and three maids came into the room, carrying dinner for the men. I was a bit hungry and had to avert my eyes from the sight of the yellow custard with ginkgo nuts, served in beautiful celadon cups. Later, the maids came back with dishes of grilled tropical fish laid out on beds of pine needles. Nobu must have noticed how hungry I looked, for he insisted I taste it. Afterward, the chairman offered a bite to Mameha, and also to Pumpkin, who refused.
"I wouldn't touch that fish for anything," Pumpkin said. "I don't even want to look at it."
"What's wrong with it?" Mameha asked.
"If I tell you, you'll only laugh at me."
"Tell us, Pumpkin," Nobu said.
Why should I tell you? It's a big, long story, and anyway, nobody's going to believe it.
Big liar, I said. I wasn't actually calling Pumpkin a liar. Back before the closing of Gion, we used to play a game we called Big Liar, in which everyone had to tell two stories, only one of which was true. Afterward, the other players tried to guess which was which. The ones who guessed wrong drank a penalty glass of sake.
I'm not playing, said Pumpkin.
Just tell the fish story, then, said Mameha, and you don't have to tell another. Pumpkin didn't look pleased at this, but after Mameha and I had glowered at her for a while, she began.
Oh, all right. It's like this. I was born in Sapporo, and there was an old fisherman there who caught a weird-looking fish one day that was able to speak.
Mameha and I looked at each other and burst out laughing.
Laugh if you want to, Pumpkin said, but it's perfectly true.
Now go on, Pumpkin, we're listening, said the chairman.
Well, what happened was, this fisherman laid the fish out to clean it, and it began making noises that sounded just like a person talking, except the fisherman couldn't understand it. He called a bunch of other fishermen over, and they all listened for a while. Pretty soon, the fish was nearly dead from being out of the water too long, so they decided to go ahead and kill it. But just then, an old man made his way through the crowd and said he could understand every single word the fish was saying because it was speaking in Russian.
We all burst out laughing, and even the minister made a few grunting noises. When we'd calmed down, Pumpkin said,
I knew you wouldn't believe it, but it's perfectly true.
I want to know what the fish was saying, said the chairman.
It was nearly dead, so it was kind of whispering, and then the old man leaned down and put his ear to the fish's lips.
Fish don't have lips, I said.
All right, to the fish's, whatever you call those things, Pumpkin went on, to the edges of its mouth, and the fish said, Tell them to go ahead and clean me. I have nothing to live for any longer. The fish over there who died a moment ago was my wife.
So fish get married, said Mameha. They have husbands and wives.
That was before the war, I said. Since the war, they can't afford to marry. They just swim around looking for work.
This happened way before the war, said Pumpkin. Way, way before the war. Even before my mother was born.
Then how do you know it's true? Said Nobu. The fish certainly didn't tell it to you.
The fish died then and there. How could it tell me if I wasn't born yet? Besides, I don't speak Russian.
All right, Pumpkin, I said. So you believe the chairman's fish is a talking fish, too?
I didn't say that, but it looks exactly like the talking fish did. I wouldn't eat it if I was starving to death.
If you hadn't been born yet, said the chairman, and even your mother hadn't been born, how do you know what the fish looked like?
You know what the Prime Minister looks like, don't you? She said. But have you ever met him? Actually, you probably have. Let me pick a better example. You know what the Emperor looks like, but you've never had the honor of meeting him.
The chairman has had the honor, Pumpkin, Nobu said.
You know what I mean. Everybody knows what the Emperor looks like. That's what I'm trying to say.
There are pictures of the Emperor, said Nobu. You can't have seen a picture of the fish.
The fish is famous where I grew up. My mother told me all about it, and I'm telling you, it looks like that thing right there on the table.
Thank heavens for people like you, Pumpkin, said the chairman. You make the rest of us seem positively dull.
Well, that's my story. I'm not telling another one. If the rest of you want to play big liar, somebody else can start.
I'll start, said Mameha. Here's my first story. When I was about 6 years old, I went out one morning to draw water from the well in our okia, and I heard the sound of a man clearing his throat and coughing. It was coming from inside the well. I woke up the mistress, and she came out to listen to it. When we held a lantern over the well, we couldn't find anyone there at all, but we continued to hear him until after the sun had come up. Then the sound stopped, and we never heard them again.
The other story is the true one, said Nobu, and I haven't even heard it.
You have to listen to them both, Mameha went on. Here's my second. One time I went with several geisha to Osaka to entertain at the home of Akita Masaichi. He was a famous businessman who'd made a fortune before the war. After we sang and drank for hours, Akita-san fell asleep on the mats, and one of the other geisha snuck us into the next room and opened a big chest full of all kinds of pornography. There were pornographic woodblock prints, including some by Hiroshige.
Hiroshige never made pornographic prints, said Pumpkin.
Yes, he did, Pumpkin, the chairman said. I've seen some of them.
And also, Mameha went on, he had pictures of all sorts of fat European women and men and some reels of movies.
I knew Akita Masaichi well, said the chairman. He wouldn't have had a collection of pornography. The other one is true.
Now really, chairman, Nobu said, you believe a story about a man's voice coming out of a well?
I don't have to believe it. All that matters is whether Mameha thinks it's true.
Pumpkin and the chairman voted for the man in the well. The minister and Nobu voted for the pornography. As for me, I'd heard both of these before and knew that the man in the well was the true one. The minister drank his penalty glass without complaining, but Nobu grumbled all the while, so we made him go next.
I'm not going to play this game, he said.
You're going to play it, or you're going to drink a penalty glass of sake every round, Mameha told him.
All right. You want two stories? I'll tell you two stories, he said. Here's the first one. I've got a little white dog named Kubo. One night I came home, and Kubo's fur was completely blue.
I believe it, said Pumpkin. It had probably been kidnapped by some sort of demon.
Nobu looked as if he couldn't quite imagine that Pumpkin was serious. The next day it happened again, he went on tentatively. Only this time, Kubo's fur was bright red.
Definitely demons, said Pumpkin. Demons love red. It's the color of blood. Nobu began to look positively angry when he heard this.
Here's my second story. Last week, I went to the office so early in the morning that my secretary hadn't yet arrived. All right, which is the true one?
Of course, we all chose the secretary, except for Pumpkin, who was made to drink a penalty glass of sake. And I don't mean a cup, I mean a glass. The minister poured it for her, adding drop by drop after the glass was full, until it was bulging over the rim. Pumpkin had to sip it before she could pick the glass up. I felt worried just watching her, for she had a very low tolerance for alcohol.
I can't believe the story about the dog isn't true, she said after she'd finished the glass.
Already I thought I could hear her words slurring a bit.
How could you make something like that up?
How could I make it up? The question is, how could you believe it? Dogs don't turn blue or red, and there aren't demons.
It was my turn to go next. My first story is this. One night, some years ago, the kabuki actor Yoeguro got very drunk and told me he'd always found me beautiful.
This one isn't true, Pumpkin said. I know Yoeguro.
I'm sure you do, but nevertheless he told me he found me beautiful, and ever since that night he sent me letters from time to time. In the corner of every letter he glues one little curly black hair. The chairman laughed at this, but Nobu sat up, looking angry, and said,
Really, these kabuki actors, what irritating people!
I don't get it. What do you mean, a curly black hair? Pumpkin said,
but you could see from her expression that she figured out the answer right away. Everyone fell silent, waiting for my second story. It had been on my mind since we'd started playing the game, though I was nervous about telling it, and not at all certain it was the right thing to do.
Once, when I was a child, I began, I was very upset one day, and went to the banks of the Shirakawa stream and began to cry.
As I began this story, I felt almost as though I were reaching across the table to touch the chairman on the hand, because it seemed to me that no one else in the room would see anything unusual in what I was saying, whereas the chairman would understand this very private story, or at least I hoped he would. I felt I was having a conversation with him more intimate than any we'd ever had, and I could feel myself growing warm as I spoke. Just before continuing, I glanced up, expecting to find the chairman looking at me quizzically. Instead, he didn't even seem to be paying attention. All at once, I felt so vain, like a girl posturing for the crowds as she walks along, only to discover the street is empty.
I'm sure everyone in the room had grown tired of waiting for me by this time, because Mameha said, "Well, go on." Pumpkin mumbled something, too, but I couldn't understand her. "I'm going to tell another story," I said. "Do you remember the geisha, Okaichi? She died in an accident during the war. Many years before, she and I were talking one day, and she told me she'd always been afraid a heavy wooden box would fall right onto her head and kill her, and that's exactly how she died. A crate full of scrap metal fell from a shelf." I'd been so preoccupied I didn't realize until this moment that neither of my stories was true. Both were partially true, but it didn't concern me very much in any case, because most people cheated while playing this game. So I waited until the chairman had chosen a story, which was the one about Yoigoro and the curly hair, and declared him right. Pumpkin and the minister had to drink penalty glasses of sake. After this, it was the chairman's turn. "I'm not very good at this sort of game," he said, "not like you geisha who are so adept at lying." "Chairman," said Mameha, but of course she was only teasing. "I'm concerned about Pumpkin, so I'm going to make this simple. If she has to drink another glass of sake, I don't think she'll make it." It was true that Pumpkin was having trouble focusing her eyes. I don't even think she was listening to the chairman until he said her name. "Just listen closely, Pumpkin. Here's my first story. This evening, I came to attend a party at the Ichiriki Tea House. And here's my second. Several days ago, a fish came walking into my office. No, forget that. You might even believe in walking fish. How about this one? Several days ago, I opened my desk drawer, and a little man jumped out wearing a uniform and began to sing and dance. All right, now which one is true?" "You don't expect me to believe a man jumped out of your drawer," Pumpkin said. "Just pick one of the stories. Which is true?" "The other one. I don't remember what it was." "We ought to make you drink a penalty glass for that, Chairman," said Mameha. When Pumpkin heard the words penalty glass, she must have assumed she'd done something wrong, because the next thing we knew, she'd drunk half a glassful of sake, and she wasn't looking well. The chairman was the first to notice and took the glass right out of her hand. "You're not a drain spout, Pumpkin," the chairman said. She stared at him so blankly, he asked if she could hear him. "She might be able to hear you," Nobu said, "but she certainly can't see you." "Come on, Pumpkin," the chairman said. "I'm going to walk you to your home, or drag you if I have to." Mameha offered to help, and the two of them led Pumpkin out together, leaving Nobu and the minister sitting at the table with me. "Well, minister," Nobu said at last, "how was your evening?" I think the minister was every bit as drunk as Pumpkin had been, but he muttered that the evening had been very enjoyable. "Very enjoyable indeed," he added, nodding a couple of times. After this, he held out his sake cup for me to fill, but Nobu plucked it from his hand. Chapter 32. All through that winter and the following spring, Nobu went on bringing the minister to Gion once or even twice every week. Considering how much time the two of them spent together during these months, you'd think the minister would eventually have realized that Nobu felt toward him just as an ice pick feels toward a block of ice. But if he did, he never showed the least sign. To tell the truth, the minister never seemed to notice much of anything, except whether I was kneeling beside him and whether his cup was full of sake. This devotion made my life difficult at times. When I paid too much attention to the minister, Nobu grew short-tempered, and the side of his face with less scarring turned a brilliant red from anger. This was why the presence of the chairman, Mameha, and Pumpkin was so valuable to me. They played the same role straw plays in a packing crate. Of course, I valued the chairman's presence for another reason as well. I saw more of him during these months than I'd ever seen of him before, and over time I came to realize that the image of him in my mind whenever I lay on my futon at night wasn't really how he looked, not exactly. For example, I'd always pictured his eyelids smooth with almost no lashes at all, but in fact they were edged with dense, soft hair like little brushes, and his mouth was far more expressive than I'd ever realized, so expressive, in fact, that he often hid his feelings only very poorly. When he was amused by something but didn't want to show it, I could nevertheless spot his mouth quivering in the corners, or when he was lost in thought,
mulling over some problem he'd encountered during the day, perhaps. He sometimes turned a sake cup around and around in his hand and put his mouth into a deep frown that made creases all the way down the sides of his chin. Whenever he was carried away in this state, I considered myself free to stare at him unabashedly. Something about his frown and its deep furrows I came to find inexpressibly handsome. It seemed to show how thoroughly he thought about things and how seriously he was taken in the world. One evening, while Mameha was telling a long story, I gave myself over so completely to staring at the chairman that when I finally came to myself again, I realized that anyone watching me would have wondered what I was doing. Luckily, the minister was too dazed with drink to have noticed. As for Nobu, he was chewing a bite of something and poking around on the plate with his chopsticks, paying no attention either to Mameha or to me. Pumpkin, though, seemed to have been watching me all along. When I looked at her, she wore a smile I wasn't sure how to interpret. One evening, toward the end of February, Pumpkin came down with the flu and was unable to join us at the Ichiriki. The chairman was late that night as well, so Mameha and I spent an hour entertaining Nobu and the minister by ourselves. We finally decided to put on a dance, more for our own benefit than for theirs. Nobu wasn't much of a devotee, and the minister had no interest at all. It wasn't our first choice as a way to pass the time, but we couldn't think of anything better. First, Mameha performed a few brief pieces while I accompanied her on the shamisen. Afterward, we exchanged places. Just as I was taking up the starting pose for my first dance, my torso bent so that my folding fan reached toward the ground and my other arm stretched out to one side, the door slid open and the chairman entered. We greeted him and waited while he took a seat at the table. I was delighted he'd arrived, because although I knew he'd seen me on the stage, he certainly never watched me dance in a setting as intimate as this one. At first I'd intended to perform a short piece called Shimmering Autumn Leaves, but now I changed my mind and asked Mameha to play Cruel Rain instead. The story behind Cruel Rain is of a young woman who feels deeply moved when her lover takes off his kimono jacket to cover her during a rainstorm, because she knows him to be an enchanted spirit whose body will melt away if he becomes wet. My teachers had often complimented me on the way I expressed the woman's feeling of sorrow. During the section when I had to sink slowly to my knees, I rarely allowed my legs to tremble, as most dancers did. Probably I've mentioned this already, but in dances of the Inoue school, the facial expression is as important as the movement of the arms or legs. So although I'd like to have stolen glances at the chairman as I was dancing, I had to keep my eyes positioned properly at all times, and was never able to do it. Instead, to help give feeling to my dance, I focused my mind on the saddest thing I could think of, which was to imagine that my Donna was there in the room with me, not the chairman, but rather Nobu. The moment I formulated this thought, everything around me seemed to droop heavily toward the earth. Outside in the garden, the eaves of the roof dripped rain like beads of weighted glass. Even the mats themselves seemed to press down upon the floor. I remember thinking that I was dancing to express not the pain of a young woman who has lost her supernatural lover, but the pain I myself would feel when my life was finally robbed of the one thing I cared most deeply about. I found myself thinking, too, of Satsu. I danced the bitterness of our eternal separation. By the end, I felt almost overcome with grief. But I certainly wasn't prepared for what I saw when I turned to look at the chairman. He was sitting at the near corner of the table so that, as it happened, no one but me could see him. I thought he wore an expression of astonishment at first, because his eyes were so wide. But just as his mouth sometimes twitched when he tried not to smile, now I could see it twitching under the strain of a different emotion. I couldn't be sure, but I had the impression his eyes were heavy with tears. He looked toward the door, pretending to scratch the side of his nose so he could wipe a finger in the corner of his eye, and he smoothed his eyebrows as though they were the source of his trouble. I was so shocked to see the chairman in pain that I felt almost disoriented for a moment. I made my way back to the table, and Mameha and Nobu began to talk. After a moment, the chairman interrupted. "Where is Pumpkin this evening?" "Oh, she's ill, chairman," said Mameha. What do you mean? Won't she be here at all?
No, not at all, Mameha said, and it's a good thing considering she has the stomach flu.
Mameha went back to talking. I saw the chairman glance at his wristwatch, and then, with his voice still unsteady, he said, Mameha, you'll have to excuse me. I'm not feeling very well myself this evening.
Nobu said something funny just as the chairman was sliding the door shut, and everyone laughed. But I was thinking a thought that frightened me. In my dance, I'd tried to express the pain of absence. Certainly, I had upset myself doing it, but I'd upset the chairman, too. And was it possible he'd been thinking of Pumpkin, who, after all, was absent? I couldn't imagine him on the brink of tears over Pumpkin's illness or any such thing, but perhaps I'd stirred up some darker, more complicated feelings. All I knew was that when my dance ended, the chairman asked about Pumpkin, and he left when he learned she was ill. I could hardly bring myself to believe it. If I'd made the discovery that the chairman had developed feelings for Mameha, I wouldn't have been surprised. But Pumpkin? How could the chairman long for someone so, well, so lacking in refinement? You might think that any woman with common sense ought to have given up her hopes at this point, and I did for a time go to the fortune-teller every day and read my almanac more carefully even than usual, searching for some sign whether I should submit to what seemed my inevitable destiny. Of course, we Japanese were living in a decade of crushed hopes. I wouldn't have found it surprising if mine had died off just like so many other people's. But on the other hand, many believed the country itself would one day rise again. And we all knew such a thing could never happen if we resigned ourselves to living forever in the rubble. Every time I happened to read an account in the newspaper of some little shop that made, say, bicycle parts before the war and was now back in business almost as though the war had never happened, I had to tell myself that if our entire nation could emerge from its own dark valley, there was certainly hope that I could emerge from mine. Beginning that march and running all through the spring, Mameha and I were busy with dances of the old capital, which was being staged for the first time since Gion had closed in the final years of the war. As it happened, the chairman and Nobu grew busy as well during these months and brought the minister to Gion only twice. Then one day, during the first week of June, I heard that my presence at the Ichiriki Tea House had been requested early that evening by Iwamura Electric. I had an engagement booked weeks before that I couldn't easily miss, so by the time I finally slid open the door to join the party, I was half an hour late. To my surprise, instead of the usual group around the table, I found only Nobu and the minister. I could see at once that Nobu was angry. Of course, I imagined he was angry at me for making him spend so much time alone with the minister, though, to tell the truth, the two of them weren't spending time together any more than a squirrel is spending time with the insects that live in the same tree. Nobu was drumming his fingers on the tabletop, wearing a very cross expression, while the minister stood at the window gazing out at the garden. All right, minister, Nobu said, when I'd settled myself at the table. That's enough of watching the bushes grow. Are we supposed to sit here and wait for you all night? The minister was startled and gave a little bow of apology before coming to take his place on a cushion I'd set out for him. Usually I had difficulty thinking of anything to say to him, but tonight my task was easier since I hadn't seen him in so long. Minister, I said, you don't like me any more? Eh? Said the minister, who managed to rearrange his features so they showed a look of surprise. You haven't been to see me in more than a month. Is it because Nobu-san has been unkind and hasn't brought you to Gion as often as he should have?
Nobu-san isn't unkind, said the minister.
He blew several breaths up his nose before adding,
I've asked too much of him already.
Keeping you away for a month? He certainly is unkind. We have so much to catch up on.
Yes, Nobu interrupted. Mostly a lot of drinking.
My goodness, but Nobu-san is grouchy tonight. Has he been this way all evening? And where are the chairman and Mameha and Pumpkin? Won't they be joining us?
The chairman isn't available this evening, Nobu said. I don't know where the others are. They're your problem, not mine.
In a moment, the door slid back, and two maids entered carrying dinner trays for the men.
I did my best to keep them company while they ate, which is to say, I tried for a while to get Nobu to talk, but he wasn't in a talking mood, and then I tried to get the minister to talk. But of course, it would have been easier to get a word or two out of the grilled minnow on his plate. So at length, I gave up and just